Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the February 27th meeting of the Education Finance Division to order. We seem to have solved the technical problems that were causing us a little problem there and hence the delay. I apologize for that. We have two bills on the agenda today. Representative Kunesh-Podein with House File 3201, the Increase Teachers of Color Act, and then after we complete that, Representative Herr on English language learner revenue support for those students. I'd like to start, however, with a motion to approve the minutes from our February 19th meeting. Do I need to pick on someone or do we have volunteers? Oh, Representative Hewitt, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes of February 19th.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Hewitt motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. With that, Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you. I spent the whole
day. Good morning, Representative. Welcome to the committee. Would you like to move that House File 3201 be laid over for possible future consideration?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative, please proceed.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm really happy to be back here again and present some of the good things that happened since the appropriation last year and ask for some help again this year. Last week, we had a really good hearing in the House Ed Policy Committee, and we heard from our state councils, students, and teachers advocating for the important policy amendments to this existing legislation. And so I'm happy to be back here today and ask you also to help us with a one-time appropriation for three of the most popular and impactful grant programs. Those three are the Grow Your Own. And we hear from so many of our superintendents and our school districts about the shortage of teachers, let alone teachers of color. And so we would look for some extra help in funding Grow Your Own programs. We're looking for funding in the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Education of Color program. That's the CUGMEC. And the third one is our Teacher Mentorship and Retention. The Teacher of Color Act and bill is a very comprehensive bill. It takes us all the way from recruiting and helping the students, the student teachers through their programming, to the eventual receiving a job, going through their student teaching, and then probably one of the most important parts is around that mentoring and retention of our teachers. Teaching is a hard job. It's not all fun and games. It's not all glitter and unicorns and that sort of thing. And yes, we do get our summers away from the school, but most of our teachers will spend that summer and their time outside of the district, outside of school time, building on their skills and their abilities. And so the funding for the teacher and retention is really important because it's those first years of our teaching that as we get our groove going that we really need that extra help. So in your packet, you should find a handout. It's this one right here. And it explains on the chart that the demand is strong for grant programs to help prepare and retain more teachers of color and American Indian teachers. And you can see that there are some significant changes over the last couple of years in the number of applicants and the number of participants. Let's see, where are we? So last year, the bill, House File 824, called for $16.5 million for just these three programs as the estimated amount needed to help increase the percentage of teachers of color. And just 1% in this committee recommended nearly $10 million for the program in the omnibus bill. Well, it's only a one-time extra funding request. with our legislative calendar in these odd number years, budget years, the setting doesn't align with our district programming and planning or implementation efforts. So you'll see that we are asking for any balance that does not, any balance that is carried out from one fiscal year to the other, it does not cancel, but that we make it available for the following fiscal year. This appropriation would allow a large supplemental appropriation to serve as a bridge for the school's needs for the spring of 2021 and to know what grants they have available for the 21-22 year. Because we are not aligned, the granting process has become a little bit complicated and we aren't able to do it as smoothly as we would like. So what has happened is that during the current academic years, agencies and grant applicants have to wait for the results of the 2021 legislative session before those efforts at recruiting and supporting teachers and teacher candidates can begin after the delayed granting process that concludes months into the school year. So I am pleased to present this to you, and I ask for the appropriations to continue the progress and the success of this program. And I have a few folks that would like to speak to this, and after that I would gladly address questions from the committee.
Thank you very much, Representative Kunesh-Badin. You have initial testifiers?
I do. Shannon? So we have Jasmine Carey, Samantha Diaz, Andrew Morse.
And my understanding is that this is a group this is a group project.
Yes.
Just like school. So as you get settled in, welcome to the committee, to all of you. Please, before you speak the first time, simply introduce yourself. It's all taped and you all know that by now. Thank you very much. Who's lead off?
Hi, Chair and committee members. Thanks for having us today. My name is Jasmine Carey, and I am the Legislative and Policy Director for the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage here at the state.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you for prioritizing this bill as one of the first your committee is hearing this session. As our four councils, the three state ethnic councils, as well as the Minnesota Council of India Affairs have stated in previous testimony on last year's Increased Teacher of Color Act, our advocacy for this bill remains the top joint priority in education for all of our councils. This bill addresses the severe shortage of teachers who reflect the increasing racial and ethnic diversity of our state's students that negatively impact their educational opportunities and achievement, as well as our state's economy. Any additional investments you can make will continue to help achieve equity for our constituent communities. We appreciate the committee's proposal in last year's omnibus bill that included nearly $10 million for the three grant programs highlighting in this year's bill seeking supplemental appropriation. The base funding of $3.25 million for these programs is currently not meeting demand, and there are people right now who can't benefit from even one-time funding. Significantly, more funding will be needed in the next biennium and bienniums further to come to demonstrate the state consistently is serious about increasing the percentage of teachers of color in American Indian teachers. This would also contribute to making good on the state's 2016 commitment when it amended several statutes to the state that would allow that would say that students shall have improved and equitable access to effective and diverse teachers who reflect the diversity of students.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Shannon Gijik, Boys Fort Band member, executive director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee members, as you can see in the handout, detailing statistics about the numbers and shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota, this challenge is not limited to the metro area. There is still a wide gap between the diversity of students and their teachers in every region of the state.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andrew Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison with the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Members of the committee, given these gaps, consequently, One of the most important policy provisions in this bill is to establish a state goal for gradual annual increases to the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers so that in 20 years, by 2040, all students will have equitable access to diverse teachers who reflect students' own diversity. Reaching this goal will be challenging and will require significantly more state investments, especially during years with a projected surplus, as is the case this year. And to help lawmakers and the public track all state spending for programs that claim to address the shortage of teachers of color, PELSBY would be tasked with working with other state agencies and stakeholders to produce a report that tracks spending and aggregated outcomes to see what works to move the needle. The requested appropriation for this report, based on consultation with PELSBY, is $15,000.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Samantha Diaz, and I'm the Legislative and Policies Director at the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Just want to quickly conclude our testimony by asserting that you can feel really confident in your investment. Research is clear that significantly increasing the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers will help narrow our state's persistent and wide opportunity and achievement gaps, while also helping reach the state's world's best workforce and higher education attainment goals. Thank you for your leadership and support to address this important issue to our communities and all of Minnesota.
Thank you all very much. Representative Kunesh-Podein, I have on my agenda two speakers regarding the Grow Your Own provision. And again, as we do here, if you would please introduce yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Angela Maria Bonilla Camargo. I'm here, I'm a student of Roseville Area High School, and I'd like to tell you today why I want to be a teacher, what my experiences have been like as a student without teachers of color, and how the inter-urban education course I took in my high school for college credit strengthened my interest in being a teacher. I want to be a teacher because of one main reason, the students. I came to this conclusion last summer while at my job, a bilingual daycare. I knew the moment I saw the glimmer in the kids' eyes every time they learned something new that I wanted to see that the rest of my life, and not only to see it, but to be the reason it was there. In the 9 years I have lived here, I have had a total of 4 teachers of color. This has been very hard for me. I came from Colombia where all my teachers knew me and they all looked like me. However, when I came here and I moved to Minnesota and went to a school where there were no teachers who were Latino, it was hard. It was especially hard on me in the beginning. I was new to English and the culture shock was immense. I felt alone as if there was no one I could confide in. I know I'm not alone in this. I have seen how hard it is for my fellow peers to not have teachers that look like them. It's hard not seeing yourself represented by the people who shape you as a person. Not only this, but the lack of teachers of color in my schools has limited the worldviews and ideals that I have learned. I have had to go out of my way to find different perspectives from people of different backgrounds because my teachers could not and sometimes would not provide them. Having different worldviews informs students better so that we can begin to define who we are as individuals, so that we can become who we are and not what others are. As Anna Quinlan once said, imitations are redundant, yourself is what is wanted. I never expected my intro to urban education class to be so pivotal for me. It gave me an outlet for talking about issues that I was never able to talk about before in school. We talked about how there is a gap between students of color and white students concerning their involvement in AP and honors courses and about racial issues in the United States in general. It made me fully comprehend that a teacher's job is to educate a student in more ways than one. And I would be honored if I could ever get the opportunity to educate a student in the sense of opening their eyes to worldviews and current issues in our society. I am eager to go to college and become a teacher, and I appreciate the opportunity you have given me to earn college credit while in high school, and I know I'm not alone in this feeling. Thank you so much for the funding that made it possible.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Dabney and committee members. She's a hard act to follow.
She is. Good luck.
Well, I stand here proud, and my name is Danae Franchi. I'm from St. Paul Public Schools, and I'm representing the SUTOR program, and it's a teacher residency program that you have supported in the past. And what I'm sharing with you today is two handouts in your packet. One is an description of our program, which I will explain briefly, as well as some of the outcomes by numbers. And so when I listen to this testimony and I hear her experiences, it makes me very excited and proud to share my story of a program that could and is already, because of your support, supporting students like her to become teachers for the students of our state. So again, I'm with the Suter program. We are an urban teacher residency program. We are a 15-month district-serving program that has a goal of recruiting, preparing, and retaining highly effective teachers that represent the students of our diverse communities and share similar life experiences. It is also a program that is a model for school and university partnerships to continue to enhance our abilities to improve upon cultural competencies while eliminating racial disparities. We have, the program itself is 15 months. There's a summer boot camp, and then there's a during the school year, our residents do 1 day a week in classes and the 4 days of the week in clinical with a trained cooperating teacher. So they're not the teacher of record, they are a resident, and they are side by side with a master teacher learning how you do school from the fall all the way till the school closes in June. And then they have a couple more months of classes that are mostly online where they get their master's degree. Our district does pay a stipend to the resident, a living wage stipend. There is a trained mentor in the program. Our coursework and our clinical is completely aligned. When I say district serving, I truly mean that we, in partnership with the University of St. Thomas, work to create essential elements that we align with our SET and our observation data, that monthly we focus on essential high leverage practices that we have identified based on district needs of what first year teachers need. We do joint observations with university supervisors and district staff. We are proud to say that our residents spent about 1,200 hours in a setting where they're similar to a medical residency. They are practicing. They're learning and then doing, learning and then doing. And we also are excited to share the outcomes that we've done. We, tomorrow morning, are starting our interview phase. We have 45 folks that we're going to interview for cohort 5. And so we're excited to see the numbers. So this handout will show you some of the outcomes that we've had in the past 4.5 years that we've been around because of the funding that you've provided. So on this handout, what you'll see is that in 3 years, we have had 74 graduates, and our completion rate is 93%. Our retention rate is 70% after 3 years of teaching with us, which we all know is not a retention rate that we want to brag about in terms of that's good enough. It's a great start, and we want to continue to work on our retention, which is why continual funding and being able to put a timeline in a place that allows us to plan for that retention can only benefit the program more. You'll also see that our folks of color that have been a part of this work are ranging between 60 and 68% every cohort that we've put through. So it is meeting the needs of the goal of the appropriations. You also see on the back, one of the really neat things about a residency program is the growth that our current teachers get. So when I said that they're co-teaching with a mentor teacher for the whole year, oftentimes our mentor teachers are white teachers because that's the population in our district in which they have stayed for several years and have identified or have demonstrated the skills to be a highly qualified teacher. So not only does this work prepare new folks into teaching, it also takes our current teachers and grows their practice in the classroom with kids, and it also enhances their abilities to be racially responsive when they're working with our students. Again, you'll see the program highlights at the bottom of this in terms of the stipend that we pay, and that is directly from the appropriations that we get from this committee. And without that stipend, our residents could not complete a full year, full-time student, full-time resident type of program. So I would love to say that with increased funding and a timely planning, we could take a program like this and do more cohort members. We could increase stipends as needed. We could possibly add additional licenses based on district hiring needs. We could do more support for graduates in their induction years. And we could plan for additional needed pathways. So in closing, I just want to really say thank you for the support that you've given us, and we're excited by our outcomes. We're ready and excited to continue this necessary work and make a larger impact for our students.
Thank you very much. I think we have a couple questions. Representative Kreshaw.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Franke, for your testimony and for the good work you're doing in your program. My question is, do you track then the assignments that these one through three cohorts have gotten in your school district or in the St. Paul district? So you know whether or not they've been placed in classrooms where they're not going to have a discouragement because of the climate or the setting or the assignment, because we want to make sure that these teachers are in classrooms where they're going to get support and they have the knowledge and skills to proceed, and that the retention is not going to be based on discouragement because maybe the union contract forced them into that setting. So would you comment on whether you track?
Ms. Franke.
Yes, thank you. Yes, we track. Our program sits in our HR department, so we work hand in hand with our hiring staff and with our, you'll see we're special education and we're elementary ed, so we work with our special education supervisors in order to find a fit for hire. The ABS license in the state of Minnesota is K-12 with a variety of disabilities, and so being able to find positions that are open and that also match the needs of our residents is a priority for us. We have been able also to hire with additional funds, because we can match with the funds that we have gotten from here, a TQP grant that's allowed us to hire two specialists, one in elementary and one in special education, so that we can, as soon as they're hired in buildings, provide additional support as needed.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Franke, do those who leave then, because I'm looking at your district retention for novice teachers, do they give reasons for leaving, and do you record that so you can keep that data?
Yes, thank you for asking. You'll see that the 70% is much higher than the rest of the district. And yes, we do track our program completers that leave the district. I would like to report that at least half of those that have left are still teaching. They're just maybe not in St. Paul due to maybe a not fit hire, which is something we're learning from, and we're taking this data and we're spreading it district wide in terms of how can we improve our retention throughout the whole program. And we do have exit surveys that we're using to continue. So I hope to come back in coming years and show you that our retention rate has gotten better.
Thank you. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and testifiers. I want to say that I support this effort. I taught school for a long while, and on a couple of faculties I taught, there were no teachers of color, and we served a broad variety of people. My concern, though, is where can we be most effective in finding people who are going to become teachers and stay as teachers, not just teachers of color, but all teachers? Seems to me retention is really an important issue. The program that's offered in St. Paul is really generous and really inviting, it seems to me. But still, numbers are kind of low. And are we making an investment that's going to have the best return? Just listening to your numbers, it sounds to me like of the 74 grads over the last 3 years, 70% stay on. That's about 50 or 60 kids, or young people, I should say, and still maybe only 17 or 20 teachers a year. In order to make real progress and in order to encourage students like you to come and stay, we've got to be stronger and faster and more aggressive. I benefited from the NDAA Act after graduating from college. I got an NDAA loan. I worked it off after 7 years or 10 years or something teaching in a poverty school. Do you have other suggestions besides something like this, ways we can be efficient with our investment and more successful with our attracting young people of color to the profession and keeping them there? What are your suggestions based on your experience?
Ms. Franke.
Well, thank you for your question. Yes, I think that's a great question, and I do think that programs like this are helping us figure out those answers. They're helping us really have the discussions, looking at the numbers, and to the answer about do we take exit interviews. If you look at our district retention rate, it's not where it should be. And I think about the recent report that came out about teachers in Minnesota, about how half of them are not teaching. So I don't know that this is just, I would say this is not a St. Paul. This is a Minnesota and even national problem that we need to try to solve about retention. I think programs like this are the beginning of the solution. They're not the only solution. We have to have multiple pathways. We have to have different opportunities for different students, because they're just like the students of our schools, adults learn and progress in different ways and different manners. So this is one pathway that I do believe is recruiting diverse teachers and retaining diverse teachers. That's not to say that there's not systems within schools that aren't preventing folks, that are preventing folks to stay and thrive in teaching. So I think by using these kinds of programs and collecting the data and continuing to try new things, such as our induction support, such as we just implemented affinity groups, we implemented navigating pairs, we're really trying some different methods to keep teachers. So I wish I had the answer. I do know that programs like this and what you're hearing from today are all putting effort towards that.
Thank you. One follow-up.
Chair,
are there state programs in other places around the country where teacher preparation programs are more successful in turning out more young teachers and more young teachers of color that we might be able to learn from?
Ms. Frankie.
Other examples? Thank you.
So I don't feel qualified to talk about all universities in Minnesota. I would say that some of my colleagues that are here, the general understanding is that nobody has found the key, nobody's found the answer, and nobody is overwhelmingly producing solid teachers that stay in St. Paul that look like our students.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And do you have other testimony? I can wait to the end.
I'm sorry.
Do you have other testimony? I can wait to the end.
We do have other testimony on other areas, but if it's related to the SUTOR program, go ahead.
I'll wait till the end.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Frankie. Up next, we have the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color, and it looks like, and I apologize if I'm not saying this correctly, Miriam Abdullahi.
Madam Chair, as they come down, can I just have a point of personal privilege?
Representative Hewitt.
I couldn't think of a better day for the kids from Apple Valley Rosemount in there. And if you guys can raise your hands back there, they are our future teachers of our district, so I'm glad they're here for this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Well, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, my name is Miriam Abdullahi. I'm currently teaching 7th grade English Language Arts at Roosevelt Middle School in Blaine, Minnesota. I completed the 512 Communication Arts License program this past fall at Augsburg University. Every K-12 student wants to hear they are doing a great job. In particular, students of color need to be acknowledged but also supported, even pushed. We often do not realize the impact tracking has on our students of color. I have worked with students of color who underestimated their own abilities all of the time. One student stood out to me. She could not believe that I recommended her for honors courses and hesitated to schedule the meeting to request a change with her counselor, even though she had the highest grade in the class. After pushing her and reminding her she was more than capable, she decided to go for it. The day her schedule officially changed, she approached me and thanked me for encouraging her. As she walked back to her desk, I flashed back to myself as a freshman in high school. Although she does not know this, we are both very similar. One schedule change during my freshman year by a teacher who believed in me changed the entire trajectory of my life. One student of color, our students of color need teachers who may have lived like they do, understand their experience, and hold them to the highest of standards. Being an East Scholar has made it possible for me to become a teacher. Being the oldest child of an immigrant household is no easy task and requires a tremendous amount of responsibility. The financial benefit of the program helped to relieve many of my stresses. However, it was the support that kept me going. As I went through the program, I always had people in my corner that supported me and validated my experience as a person of color in a white-dominated field. Thank you so much for providing the money for this program in the past. It has changed my life and the life of many others. I really hope the committee provides even more money so that more candidates of color can be supported in becoming K-12 teachers, because our kids need more diversity in our classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Asuji?
Yes. Good morning, members of the House. My name is Vivian Asuji, and I'm here on behalf of the SEED program, Concordia University. I earned my license K through 6 from Concordia University in 2018, and I am currently teaching at Richfield Middle School here in the Twin Cities. I am a sixth grade math teacher. Being a teacher of color has been very satisfying to me, because as we all know, Minnesota schools, it's getting so much diverse and having so many students of color. And just the fact that a student comes into the classroom and sees a person much like them is very settling. Then it's on us who are teachers to now build the necessary relationship that sets everything in place for the student to be successful. Now, with that said, I have students who have been quote-unquote terrible students, bad students, this and that, staying in my classroom wanting to learn every single day. Students come into my classroom and say, can I stay after school and learn because I'm struggling in math? They stay after school with me, and guess what? They realize how smart they are rather than feeling otherwise. That is what we want to see. And so, that said, it is so much. I can say, go on and on and on. It is such little things like students not just learning math, but learning that respect is what they need for their future life. And kids stay in class and say, you gotta be respectful, because we have to learn. That is what we're talking about. It is such little things like students coming and saying, after their math test, oh, look what I got in math. I scored so high, and I've been scoring low. And they are so proud of themselves. That's what we want. And so this would have not been possible for me to make this difference without the SEED program of the Concordia University. The program is such that we have exemplary leadership in the name of Professor Bass and the faculty and staff of Concordia University College of Education and Science. We owe them a lot. They understand, and I say understand, our background, our cultural differences. They understand our struggles and our successes, and they mentored us very well. And we are proud to say that we are students from Concordia University, because we came out very strong. I want to extend my thanks on behalf of the SEED program for all my alumni. Without you guys, we wouldn't have done this. We earn so little that is not even enough for our family needs, not to talk of thinking about tuition, college tuition. But with the money that you provided, we only had to think about our studies, because our books are paid for, our tuition is almost paid for, and so somebody like me had to just focus on my studies and get my license in a record time. Thank you so much. I hope that in the future, as I am thanking you guys right now, because without you, I couldn't have done it, that you provide more money for teachers of color, because we need that in Minnesota schools. Our schools are getting more and more diverse. Students need to come in and see people who look like them and feel settled. That you provide more money for us to be educated and go into these classrooms and make the difference that we expect in Minnesota. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mrs. Tsuchi. Representative Erickson, would you mind holding questions? We have...
It's a question for Mr. Strom, and he can give us the answer later. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, would you tell us before the end of this meeting today, for how many years have we funded the Urban Educator Program, and for how many years have we provided scholarships through the K-12 budget for American Indians? Would you make sure we get that data? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for your testimony. Up next, it looks like we have a couple testifiers for the teacher mentorship and retention. Come on down and welcome to the committee. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, Chair and members, good morning. My name is Roberta Hernandez. I live and teach in Roseville, Minnesota. A year ago, I was here at that time to request support for the House file. At that time, it was 824, Mentorship and Retention of Grants. We're here today to thank you for supporting that, and I want to share with you some of the things that we're doing in our district, and Verna will be talking about some things that we're doing together in Metro and Greater Minnesota with those funds. Our grant in Roseville is to develop a three-year mentorship program because we see the need to begin to work with our new teachers and support them all the way through to tenure. Our tenured teachers of color will be mentoring our newly hired teachers of color, and those mentors are going to receive support as well. We are going to begin this in the spring, and we will continue it on dependent on further funding through the years. We are also funded for professional development and support for affinity group. Last year I mentioned that our affinity group was established in 2006. It is probably one of the longest standing affinity groups in Minnesota. We serve as a resource for others in the metro area, and we've had people from Greater Minnesota come and talk with us and see what we do and visit our group in order to begin to establish these affinity groups and their work sites as well. With the grant, we're very excited to partner with the Minnesota Humanities Center to gain deeper knowledge and experience, particularly in the areas of the absent narratives. Those are the stories that we have not heard and that our students have not heard and that our colleagues have not heard. It's a very rare opportunity for us to build our cultural capital and to build our community together. And we look forward to this because it's very rare for us to have the opportunity to listen and to be taught by scholars of color as well. That just doesn't happen much, and our affinity group is really excited about that. We're excited to bring our learning back to our students also. As we have dreamed of these possibilities, the funding that we receive from the Mentorship and Retention Grant allows us to make these things realities. And these are going to be things that will provide skills and support that we believe that our teachers are asking for in order to stay in the field. A few weeks ago, I met with a newer affinity group requesting support to further develop. As we talked about this mentorship and retention grant, I learned that their proposal was not selected and they were deeply discouraged because they felt like most of the reviews had been strong. I encouraged them to reapply and offered support to help them with their grant writing process as well. If we are to increase the numbers of Black, Indigenous teachers of color in the state, we have to continue to support the development of affinity groups and in whatever ways that we can do that in the metro area and in Greater Minnesota. For this reason, we are requesting further funding to support House File 3201 in order to make more hopes become realities for our friends and our colleagues throughout the state. For now.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Verna Wong, and I live in Minneapolis and am a teacher in Anoka Hennepin School District. I am a founding member of the Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition, which is a coalition of teachers currently under a committee with Education Minnesota and our local union. Roberta and I represent two coalitions together, and we are grant recipients of the Pelsby grant of House File 3201. I am grateful that there is finally funding to support teachers of color retention. Prior to House File 3201, it was difficult for Minnesota affinities to continue long-term collaborations to share and implement best practices and strategies. These grant funds will provide resources that sustain the work teachers are already doing in a challenging profession. As grantees, we, Roberta and I, were awarded funds to continue our collaboration between Anoka Hennepin Teachers of Color Coalition and Roseville Affinity Focus to strengthen our and our desire to strengthen our teachers of color and American Indian teachers across the metro by building a local base of Minnesota teachers, providing mentorship opportunities through cross-district networking and local affinity groups, and then finally strengthening our relationship with the Institute of Teachers of Color Committed to Racial Justice, which is a national consortium of teachers and teacher educators. Right now, we have a strong planning team of teachers representing a dynamic group of women of color from five different school districts. Two of them represent early career teachers, and we're planning a fall retreat in partnership with the Minnesota Humanities Center. Our hope is that these funds will continue to provide teacher agency across the metro and greater Minnesota to build our own systems of support, similar to the organic relationships that have evolved over time between ATOC and FOCUS. I also wanted to add that working across various coalitions, affinities, and organizations is not easy work. And thankfully, Education Minnesota is serving as our fiscal sponsor in this grant, and we are confident that they will help ensure help in ensuring that teachers in FOCUS and ATOC and others will have access to these funds. This week, I received a text from a former ATOC member outside of our school district. She was working in her school district for a while, and then she moved on to another school district, and she said, her text was, quote, "I met with another teacher at my high school, and we got to talking, thinking of starting our own affinity group from scratch, exclamation point. And I responded, I love it, you rock, and also, if you need a little funding, I have some through our Pelsby grant." I just want to take a minute also because Miriam's here, and it's kind of cool to see her because she started as a student teacher at my school, and my school this year started a local affinity group led by ATOC members, and we meet once a month, and she was a part of that group, and now she's at her school district. So that's something I also wanted to add to. So continued support for House File 31 provides the opportunity for us to strengthen our cross-district collaborations that can begin to build towards a more collective vision for teachers in Minnesota.
Thank you. At this time, the committee would like to hear from anyone in the public who wishes to testify for or against any of this bill. If you'd like to testify, please approach the microphone. Okay, we're gonna move on. If there are no more questions, Representative Kresha, I'm sorry, you do have a question, go ahead.
Yeah, if there's no more, I mean, that's fine, I can go. Are you ready?
I'm ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the bill author and the testifiers, thank you for bringing this forward. Obviously, this is of great importance. As I try to dig into this and really try to understand why we're here and how we can solve it, one of the first questions I have is, are there ample candidates in the pipeline? At the front end of this, what are we missing? Are there ample candidates? Let's start there.
Representative.
Sure. So, Representative, if you will look at the chart, you'll see that it is growing. We would love to see tens of 20s of 30s of candidates coming forward, but I think there's maybe we need to do a little bit of PR work around this. For a long time, being a teacher was not a positive profession in this state. We got a lot of bad publicity from a lot of different areas. I think we were somewhat discouraged. Candidates were discouraged from going into the teaching profession. Teaching has become harder. But I believe, as you've seen here, the word gets out. And as more of our programs target the high school level and do introductory to teaching, I'm pretty confident that we will increase our teachers as they start from the high school into our college levels. We all know how expensive it is to go to school. We know that teachers' starting salary is not all that attractive. There are struggles. But you can't, when you start a project, it's always going to take a little bit of time to build on it over the years. And just as you've heard, word of mouth and getting the word out between our universities and colleges, I'm really confident that we will increase those teachers of color. But we have to continue to invest in it. We can't just say, oh, we've got a few here. That's not where our money's best. You don't know what's coming down the pike. We don't know who's ready to jump into this program. And if they know that there are these kind of resources and support, it can only increase the program.
Representative Kresha.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and to the bill author, thank you for that answer. And much of that I agree with. One of the things that I just wonder about, and I have no, we absolutely need to keep investing, and the question I'm having is, where do we best invest our money? I mean, one of the things that you mentioned in your answer was how we get people interested in the teaching profession. If there's a testifier that would, I entered the teaching profession because of other teachers, mentors. Nobody sat down and said, this is a salary requirement, and we went through the career thing. I was emulating the people that I thought were my mentors and good people. And I'm wondering, has that changed? I mean, and we may not have an answer, I'm just asking this rhetorically. I mean, has it changed that our current teachers are not emulating that? Are they speaking negatively? Could this be a more positive thing? How do we bring these kids into our fold? Because many of them, and I see somebody raising her hand, I'd invite you to come down and help answer that, because how do we do that? Because you teach the way you were taught, in my experience, and you emulate your mentors.
Ms. Hernandez.
If I may just start for a minute. You know, as a teacher for these last couple of decades, I am often looking at students myself and encouraging them to go into the teaching profession. You know, if you, when I was at the elementary level and we would talk during our career week, and I'd be in the library and I'd read about all these other little, all these other professions, and I'd have, you know, kindergarten, first grade, all the way through fifth grade, and I'd say, okay, who wants to be a fireman? Oh, they raise their hand. Who wants to be an athlete? Oh, more hands, you know. Who wants to be a teacher? A couple kids would say, and I'd say, but teaching is great. You know, look at what your teacher is doing. Look at all those things. And our society doesn't always show the value of being a teacher. You know, we look at athletes, we look at musicians, you know, we look at the bright, sparkly professions, you know, firemen in their big red truck. And I think one of the things that we have to do as a state is to raise the value and the vision of what it is to be a teacher and to be creating the next generation of Minnesotans. So with that, I will turn it over to
Ms. Hernandez.
Thank you, Chair members. These are just my observations, and I want to just say that they're my observations. I feel like when we have students of color in classrooms, where they're not maybe fully understood, maybe they're dealing with language issues, maybe their way of life and their families are not experiencing the same educational process as the white students are in the classroom. Maybe they don't see it as something that they want to do because it's not been that exciting and meeting their needs and engaging for them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate what Representative Kunich said about some things take time, and I do believe it's possible to look at systems and to begin, and all of our districts are doing work to try to help teachers understand those differences and becoming much more culturally relevant and proficient in their teaching. And I know that we in Roseville are doing a lot of work in my school in particular. My school in particular, we have 26 different languages, so it's like a fertile field for trying to figure out what's going to work here. And how do we engage families and how do we engage students in a way that's going to light their eyes up the way that white teachers know how to light the eyes up of their white students? And I say that, and I see my white colleagues trying and working hard to also have that happen. But I think that that's a difference that maybe we need to name, that as we continue to work on all these different systems, and this does take time because it means all of us first becoming aware, identifying what are the ways that we need to change ourselves in order to teach students in ways that are going to engage them and excite them about learning and really excite them about becoming a teacher themselves. That change work takes some time. It is happening slowly. And I think that, you know, it's like a lot of different layers to how are we doing this.
Mm-hmm.
We also face the same question. We're thinking, how do we as a district, how do we as a school system partner with higher education, how do we really go into I teach elementary, but how do we go into the high school and really find and cultivate those students that maybe have a desire to want to be able to do these things? And that's about building relationships, which also does take, you know, some time to be able to do that. But I think that I really appreciate the idea that what are the things that we can identify and how do we begin to change those things and give them the time that they need to change, to give ourselves the time that we need to change, for my colleagues to have the time to change, not only when we're sitting in professional development, but when in the heat of the moment, they're up against something and they think, I'm not gonna fall back on what I used to do, but I remember what I've learned and I'm gonna use that instead. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Follow up. Members, we do need to keep this brief. We do have another bill to hear. Go ahead.
Yeah, and also to add to that, I think that there's a lot around the narrative about the challenges of teachers, and yes, we have a lot of challenges, But when I speak to people that in my affinity, I'm hearing them, and when they talk about teaching, their eyes light up. Mm-hmm. You know, they love this work, and they're passionate about their teachers. This last summer, I was a part of I was working with the Minnesota Writing Project, and I did a cohort. And one of the positive things about that setup with the Summer Institute that I was a part of was that I got to hear from my colleagues, and they taught a lesson to me. And we did model, and we did practice lessons with each other. And it was just powerful to be in front of white teachers, teachers of color, who are passionate about their work, who are in it, who are struggling through it, but are also willing to move forward and push. And I think that one way to sustain and to incur and to build that pipeline or to build our teachers is to see what teachers are doing, recognize it, invest in it, and instead of overloading them with more work, and you know, we recognize it, invest in it, and see that as a possibility for what future outcomes could look like. So we need to look at our assets, where teachers are at, and our strengths.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, Mr. Strom has the answer to your question. And following that, Representative Kunesh Podien will let you give some closing comments.
So, Madam Chair, am I not going to be able to finish my line of questioning?
I'm sorry. Mr. Krisha, please go ahead.
Thank you.
Representative Krisha, go ahead.
Thank you. So, fantastic. And one of the things that you said there, and I think that's so important, is, and one of the statements you said was the narrative tends to be negative. And though, I mean, there's many people here have taught, if you are a teacher, you light those eyes up. Of course there's challenges. And that's one of the things I'm trying to get at. I mean, the state can do things and we can try to invest in ideas, but at the grassroots level, we have to change the perception of what this is. And it's easy to fall into the negative narrative, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to, after a long day and somebody asks you how it's going, you may go the wrong way, but we know these kids are like sponges and they're going to take this in. So I think that's great. One last question that I have on the bill, to the bill testifier, section 5.12 to 5.23, we look at how we might change requirements, the testing centers and all that. What is happening now? Are there candidates that are being turned away because of low fees and all these other, I mean, what are we trying to fix there? Or is that just, I'm trying to figure out where that came from and what we would actually fix. And if we were to make those changes, would that increase the candidates? Are there more that would come through?
Representative Kunesh Podien.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. You know, there's always, as a person is going through their training, they're looking at the next step that they have to participate in and how that's going to affect their ability to participate, whether they can afford it or not. And so we just want to go through and try to remove the barriers that might possibly come. I'm going to ask Mr. Spies if he would just come up and speak to that. He oftentimes has the numbers in his head or has the resources at his fingertips.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color, American Indian Teachers in Minnesota, and I'm a professor of urban education at Metropolitan State University. Representative Krisha, the ideas of those testing accommodations to make sure that there's untimed exams, fee waivers, access to the information about what the candidates did not pass in the content and pedagogy exams, especially the content exams, is really critical because those become barriers after somebody's done their whole program and has student taught successfully. And many of our candidates are taking those exams, not just candidates of color and American Indian candidates, but white candidates as well, in all subject areas, are taking those exams half a dozen times sometimes. And those fees can rack up into the many hundreds of dollars to pass those exams. So the testing companies need to provide some more accommodations for candidates to be able to be successful and pass these exams.
Okay. Just one quick follow-up, and then if I can, Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you. And so to that, and we can take this offline, here's the fine line. Tests are designed to separate those who are able and ready to be certified and those who are not. And so there's a fine line between how many accommodations and all that. It's really about who's going to be prepared to go into this field. So what I'd like to know is, how are we doing on that? How are we doing in separating those that we need to be effective and quality teachers and give them the best one, and those that we're saying this may not be the right profession from you? So, and we don't have to do that here. I know we have a full agenda.
Mr. Spies, any
brief
comments?
Madam Chair, Representative, those tests have not been proven to have any predictive validity in the quality of somebody's teaching. It's about being able to take a test within a defined short amount of time on a very high-stakes situation. There are people who are very competent teaching and know their material well through their performance in college to be able to do well as teachers. But the tests, you know, they're supposed to be a standard measure, but they become a barrier for some people. So we can appreciate talking.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Strom, if you have your answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the American Indian Teacher Preparation Grant Program, I believe, first had an appropriation in 1988. It was somewhere between 1988 and 1990. And preceding the Q program, there were two grant programs for teachers of color in 1992 and again in 1994 under two different names. And then my records show that the Collaborative Urban Educator Program began with appropriations in 1998.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to thank you again for hearing this bill and the consideration of the continued funding for this program. As I said before, it's not a one-and-done investment. This is something that we need to build on as we go through the process and make sure that the availability of the funds and the permanence of the funds are available. And so I would once again ask for your support.
Great. With that, Representative Kunesh-Podein renews her motion to lay over House File 3201 for possible future consideration. Next
Thank
up,
you.
You're welcome. Up next, we have House File 448, Representative Herr. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if anyone collects data on the percentage of paraprofessionals who fall into these various categories of American Indian or people of color. Because as I have visited schools, I find that the paraprofessional population is much more diverse than the classroom population. And I'm just wondering if anyone is collecting data on that, because those are in our Grow Your Own programs, the candidates who then are proceeding into our teacher ed. So that's very encouraging. But I'm interested if there's data collected.
Great question. I don't have the answer to that, but we can dig into it and get back to you on that. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think as we're at a little break time here, just remember this time of the year is tournament time with the State High School League. I know, I think one of the best tournaments going on right now, I think Representative Marquardt will agree with me. We both coached wrestling over the years. And I know two schools that I represent, Forest Lake, where I coached for 34 years, and then also Stillwater I represent. They're both in the Class AAA tournament. It's going on right now, and there's some great matches. So when you take a look at your schools that you represent, if you have a school that's participating in a state tournament, regardless of sport, give those schools a call, talk to those coaches, and just congratulate them, encourage them. It's a great, our State High School League here in Minnesota does a great job promoting our sports, whether it's sports or music or theater, whatever's certified and sponsored by the State High School League, they just do a great job.
Great, wonderful. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 448 before the committee and lay it over for possible future consideration?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll make a motion to move House File 448 in front of the committee to be laid over for further consideration.
Very good, thank you very much. Representative Herr, I understand you have an author's technical amendment to 448. Can you go ahead and describe that amendment?
I do, Madam Chair. And that technical amendment is actually just to update dates, as this was a bill that was drafted last year. And this just puts the bill into the correct shape for the hearing today.
Very good. I will go ahead and move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Herr, welcome and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the Education Finance Committee once again to hear House File 448, a bill requesting an increase in funding for ELL. I don't know, I sort of feel like I gave you all my good stuff last year, so to this year maybe my personal story might not be as compelling, but I just want to quickly review the bill and what we're trying to do here. So the bill seeks to increase ELL funding from $704 to $1,400 per student per year, with an increase in the multipliers for schools with high EL concentrations from $250 to $1,000 per student. That would increase total funding for ELL from $59 million to $142 million. Last year, I shared that the MDE reported that there were over 73,000 students enrolled with English language learner status in 2018. I did try to find that data from NDE for 2019, but was unable to find that. Otherwise, I would have brought that as well. In the previous year, it was 71,919, and the EL population is growing faster than the rate of total enrollment. The primary responsibility in meeting the needs of ELs lies with local education agencies. And over the 15 years, that per pupil amount of $700 has not changed. That's 15 years it hasn't changed. Last year, over 40% of school districts across the state had a shortfall in their EL funding, and that totaled over $107 million. In St. Paul School District alone, that was $21 million. To make up the difference between revenues coming in and the actual cost of EL, school districts use their general funds to fill this gap. Lack of funding for this growing population has led to high student-teacher ratios, outdated curriculum, insufficient professional development for our educators, inadequate family support, and the inability to develop programs that have been proven to work. I can't talk about the data and sort of go through what we're facing, but I think that it's more compelling to sort of hear from those educators and administrators who actually work directly as it relates to the EL population. And so I do have four testifiers here today. And so with that, Madam Chair, with your permission, I would like to turn it over to our first testifier.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Zer Vang. I am the Assistant Superintendent of the Office of Multilingual Learning in the St. Paul Public Schools District. Thank you so much for hearing this House File 448, which will help address the need of our funding for EL services in school districts that serve English language learners. In St. Paul, EL students have been the fastest growing population. In our district, our current EL enrollment is over 10,000 students. One of every three students in our district is an English learner. There are over 120 languages and dialects represented in our student population. The top 10 languages spoken are Hmong, Spanish, Karen, Somali, Amharic, Oromo, Vietnamese, Nepali, Burmese, and Arabic. Our EL student enrollment alone in this district make us the eighth largest district in the state. We are proud to have our EL students in our St. Paul Public Schools district. We have approximately 1,000 newcomers, which means that they have been in the country 3 years or less, and they have also scored a 2.5 or less on a 6-point scale in their language proficiency. Over 650 students are identified as SLIFE, which are students with limited or interrupted formal education. And approximately 1,500 of our English learners are long-term ELs, which means they have been enrolled in American schools for more than 6 years and are not making progress toward English proficiency and are struggling with academic achievement due to language barriers. Considering the future of our EL students in our state, acquiring basic English is not enough to prepare them to meet academic standards. Basic English skills alone cannot yield healthy, contributing, thriving individuals for our community. EL students must acquire English language proficiency within 5 to 7 years, which is when they receive funding. And one major area of challenge in our district is around preparing EL students to pass standardized assessments that are typically designed to measure academic skills of native English speakers. We need adequate funding to secure resources for our English learners to achieve to high levels and pursue their dreams. I'd like to share what our district already does and what we have already invested and put forth effort. We have invested in early childhood family education. We have voluntary pre-K, in which almost 600 of our students are in that program. We've started the early identification of EL for our pre-K students so that we can provide early intervention around language services. We have a language academy program for our newcomers. We use the inclusion model, which means EL students are in the mainstream classroom, not pulled out. We use the co-teaching model for instruction, where there is one licensed teacher, one licensed content teacher, and one EL teacher teaching together to help students access the core curriculum. We are also seeing a level of EL students participating in advanced classes when we provide the right supports for them to access those rigorous courses. We also are very invested in our parent and community engagement, as well as offering the extended day program and after school and summer programs that help with credit recovery and intensive support on math and literacy development. We don't need more programs. We want to build capacity with what programs we already have in place. We are very proud of what we offer for our EL students, and here's what we need. We want to make sure that our current literacy and math coaches are trained to focus on academic language strategies so that they can help mainstream teachers provide the ongoing EL services and supports. We want to provide incentives for teachers. We heard earlier about how to have teachers of color. It's very valuable to have teachers of color as EL teachers in a district our size. We have summer programs that could use more funding to provide that intensive support and that summer learning loss for our EL students can be addressed. We have after-school tutoring programs, but we do not have it for everybody in every site. That would be very helpful. We have a lot of families and individual students at the high school level who request more tutoring support after school. We have regular and ongoing communication with families, but we do struggle with the translation, interpreting bilingual staff to be able to support our families adequately and consistently. I'm going to turn it over to Si Pa Bang, who is going to talk about two programs that are very successful in St. Paul, and that not to add more programs, but to go deeper.
Welcome to the committee. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. My name is Si Pa. I am a teacher on special assignment in the Office of Teaching and Learning, supporting the Hmong Dual Language Program in Seals of Biliteracy in St. Paul Public Schools. Behalf of all the yellow students in my district, and I wish to thank you for hearing Bill House 448, which is to increase revenue for English language learners. I've been teaching in the classroom for 25 years, and then more than half of my students are ELL learners. After 25 years in the classrooms, after 25 years, I am teaching the children of my ELL learners. These U.S.-born children identify as ELL learners is vastly different needs and challenges. What troubled me the most is how we, the school, provide basically the same English services and support to this new generations of ELL learners. The dynamic of our ELL demographic bring many challenges and needs because of the diversity of the languages and cultures. Over 100 languages are spoken in Minnesota. We have also raised the bar on them, adding more standards over the years, expecting them to learn and meet toward graduation. By no means, it's great to have high expectation of our students because it's essential for their success in a competitive global society. However, the funding for ELL programs remained the same for the last 25 years of my career. The funding for ELL services has not kept up with the part of the demand of the services and support required for a successful learning classroom. Thank goodness to the WIDA testing, we identify many students with many needs for improvement. We have identified their many needs. We're asked to address their needs with the same amount of time, support, and resources. Here's my story. My classrooms of 31 students in my Hmong dual language program, and 25 of them are identify as ELL learners. In my grade level, there are four classrooms who share one ELL teacher. Out of these four classrooms, 89 of them out of the 120 are ELL learners. The ELL teacher provides 50 minutes of ELL services to my 25 ELL students. This equates to 2 minutes per student per day. We are being asked to do more for our students with less funding over the years. We are now in the year 2020, and yet we're using outdated formula for funding ELL learners when the services and needs of the new generations of ELL learners are vastly different and vary from language to language and from culture to cultures, as you have heard the diversity of our students' population in our state. And again, we provide the same services, but expect different outcomes. St. Paul Public Schools promote the preparations of students for full participation and success in global society in multilingual and multicultural. We are doing this through a two-way bilingual immersion program like the Hmong Dual Program, which nurtures a vibrant K-12 learning environment community in which students from diverse backgrounds speak, read, and write in their native language. And participate in multilingual studies and experiences as part of their education. The research of Thomas and College show that these programs, when implemented well, ELL learners do as well or can outperform peers in English-only program over time with a minimum of 4 to 7 years studying in both languages. St. Paul Public School is a leader in implementing the skills of biliteracy for this less commonly taught languages. Our district value and reinforce the language proficiency that speakers of other language already possesses. Currently, our districts award skills of biliteracy in 16 languages, including our less commonly taught languages like Ojibwe, Lakota, Dakota, Hmong, Somali, Karen, Vietnamese, and Oromo. Since 2015, our district has awarded more than 1,200 seals of biliteracy awards. One in every five awards in the states are from St. Paul Public School. We're providing great programs and offer many opportunities for ELL learners for college and career readiness, but these programs and opportunities bring many more and new challenges to our district. The funding to support them is not available. Programs like Hmong Dual Language Program, Air Heritage Program, and the first of its kind in the nation serving our highest student population in St. Paul is heavily dependent on language experts for curriculum development and materials. These quality programs and services are the avenues to proficiency in English and students' native language, but it brings tremendous cost to the district. This is true of the seals of bilingualism. Again, we are not adequately funding our ELL learners for the services, program, and opportunities offered to them when we know what our ELL learners need in closing the achievement gap and English proficiency. In closing, when I was in ELL learners 45 years ago, ELL services and support for me was fully funded. I urge to do the same now, adequately fund ELL learners programs as you're invested in their future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Unowski? Welcome to the committee. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Steve Unowski, proudly the superintendent of Richfield Public Schools, urban hometown and first-tier suburb, and home to one of the highest percentage of ELL learners in the entire state of Minnesota at 25%. We house 35 languages, 36 if we include English. From an English language learner perspective, we are doing every single best practice that's out there in the research. We are doing co-teaching, push-in, pull-out, small group, clustering our newcomers, putting our newcomers together in one school with coordinated and aligned schedules so ELL teachers can work alongside their classroom counterparts. High school, we're seeking out dual licensed staff who can teach ELL and content areas at the same time, saving time and money to our students and time and money to the state of Minnesota. We also provide dual immersion, teaching a best practice in Spanish to our students pre-K through 12, leading to the seal of biliteracy, but also making sure that students can learn in their home language. The million-dollar cross-subsidy question when I talk about this is, so how are we doing with our students? Accountability testing in the state of Minnesota. At high school, the state, 49% accountability test proficient for ELL learners. Richfield Public Schools, 59%, a 10-point gap in our favor. Graduation rates, state of Minnesota, ELL learners, 65.6%. 10-point gap also, Richfield Public Schools, 75.3% graduation rate. Current expenditures, Richfield Public Schools, $1.9 million, serving 1,103 students at a ratio of 50 to 1. So think about that for a moment. Members of the committee, many of whom were identified as educators, 50 to 1, outperforming the state on standardized tests by 10 points, outperforming graduation rate by 10 points. The reality, however, in each of the last 4 years, is we have had a gap of about $1 million between what we have spent and our revenue. Revenue has averaged $900,000 in each of the last 4 years for our ELL learners. So what does that actually mean? That's 1,103 students at a 114-to-1 ratio. If we use the funds provided by the state of Minnesota, we cut 10.7 teachers. We lay off 2 ELL teachers at STEM, 1 at Richfield Dual Language School. We lose 2 at our elementaries and 1 at each of our middle school and at our high school, leading to a 114-to-1 ratio. So when we look at that as a cross-subsidy, we are approximately 50% of the things we're needing to serve our students, and so we double those funds to get the results that we need. The reality, however, is if you ask our team what we actually need, it would be about a 35% amount of funding that we receive. Because even given the things that we're doing and best practices and the outcomes that we're getting, our SLIFE or our limited experience in school students are receiving very little service. Our dual identified students who qualify for ELL and special education are receiving very little to none in terms of extra service. And because we have to cluster all of our newcomers, our English language speakers are allowed to choose every school and receive any service that they need. But our newcomers to the country can actually only go to one and receive full service in ELL. To be able to support the outcomes that we're getting. So if we actually look at what it would take to serve our students, we're looking more at $2.81 million. We have been able to find ways in comp ed and general funding to serve at $1.9 million, and we are funded at $900,000. So I'm here in support of House File 448 to allow us to continue serving our students and getting outcomes that exceed the state of Minnesota through finding creative ways to fund well beyond what we're allocated. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Welcome to the committee, Principal Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Bennett, good to see you. My name is Chris Dibble, and I'm the principal at Southwest Middle School in Albert Lea. Southwest is a grade 6 and 7 middle school with 555 students, just 40 of those being English learners. The district as a whole houses just under 330 English learners, and I would like to begin my story with one of our newest English learners at Southwest Middle School. You can see your picture on a handout in your packet. Papa is a 12-year-old Korean refugee who arrived in Albert Lea under 1 month ago. In fact, Leap Day will be her 1 month in the United States. She spent her entire life up to this point at the My Lai refugee camp in Thailand. On January 29th, she stepped off of an airplane with her mother and two brothers, and in her words, the flight was scary. She felt sick the whole time, and there were a lot of tears throughout. Once arriving in Albert Lea, she set foot at Southwest within 1 week. She was met in the attendance office by Bui Shi, our Korean success coach at Southwest, to guide the family through the registration process. She was tested for English proficiency, where we learned she would be a level one student, having no English skills at all. The state mandate to test and enroll new students, which we have no issue with at all, gave us the baseline data to help Pawpaw become a member of our school community. Pawpaw's previous school experience included brick walls with dirt or damaged floors at Mila. The students had no textbooks and were most commonly taught using notebooks, pens, and pencils, and the lack of climate control made learning very difficult. When asked what she thought of her new school, Pawpaw smiled, and through our success coach said she is excited to come to school each day and is already having fun while learning with her other students. As a district, we have concentrated on the data-driven strategies and skills to promote English learners. We have worked with Dr. Amy Young from the Minnesota Department of Education to make the most of our programming with best practices and fiscal integrity in mind. Although this is one student's story, it is a pattern that is repeated throughout the year as more and more students with limited English skills enter into the district. With that said, funding an English learning program is not easy or cheap. Albert Lea has 9 English learning teachers with caseloads between 30 and 40 students at the secretary level and 50 to 55 students at the elementary level. These numbers are high, but it is what Albert Lea has found to work in balancing service with the funding. In addition to the 9 teachers, we also have 11 success coaches, 5 Spanish, 5 Korean, and 1 newer, who work 35 hours per week in the district. These coaches provide outreach to the parents in the community. They translate academic language and lessons when working with the EL clusters in the classrooms and provide academic support in native languages in many of our core classes. Albert Lea utilizes an achievement and integration grant that funds the success coaches for $270,000 per year. As I stated earlier, we are not disagreeing with the mandates given to us by the state of Minnesota. They are there to make sure the students are met with a program that best supports their needs when arriving with limited English skills. What would help us is the passing of House File 448 to better fund the specific needs of our EL students. For this year, in addition to the $270,000 in A&I grant money, Albert Lea budgeted just over $640,000 to meet the needs of our EL students as mandated by the state. Our revenue for the current year is around $225,000. That leaves the Albert Lea schools with a cross subsidy of over $400,000. This is not a trend that began just this year. In the past 6 years, cross subsidies have been right around $2.3 million. Add this to the current special education cross subsidies, and that moves our costs over $4 million annually. Under the new bill, the cross subsidy would drop to just over $100,000 and would open up funds for more EL options or even more options for the general fund to support EL students in the general education setting. Taxpayers in the Albert Lea District have a voter-approved levy in place that give us $3.1 million a year. Closing this cross subsidy would help in easing some of the taxpayer burden to fund these programs. In closing, schools are given a great responsibility with 2 things that people care very much about, their children and their money. You are in a very similar situation as elected officials and in sharing making decisions that balance the needs of both of those areas. I look forward to working with you in this endeavor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the public wishing to testify? Okay, not seeing anyone. Representative Juergens. Oh, I'm sorry. Come on down. My apologies. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and committee members, I am Christina Robertson, and I am here as the English Learner Program Administrator from Roseville Area Schools. I'm here to support HF 448 regarding English learner funding. As an ESL teacher and leader in this field for over 20 years, I have always been very proud of Minnesota's generous support for our English learners and immigrants. While education salaries and resource costs have increased greatly over that time period, we have not seen the same kind of funding increases for our English learner funding. Currently, we've been working with community organizations such as Coalition of Asian American Leaders, or CAL, Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, MNEEP, the Karen Organization of Minnesota, and the Bhutanese Community Organization to ensure the community voices and concerns are represented and policies are responsive to the needs of these communities. It is time to evaluate and increase English learner funding to provide support that aligns with current multilingual learner student needs. There are 3 reasons why this needs to be done now. 1, for our multilingual student success. 2, for teacher support, and 3, for the health of the Minnesota state economy. Multilingual students enter our schools with an advantage. They already know at least one language, and they need to develop academic English skills. No one is born a native academic English speaker. Our students need additional support. In Roseville, we have dedicated valuable resources to get to this important work, but every year the decisions about what to provide get more challenging. Our district general funds are matched 2-to-1 to English learner funds. What this looks like in reality is that EL staffing at a building may cost $475,000, and EL funding provides $186,200. This leaves a funding gap of $288,000. The general funds must cover this, and the gap is increasing every year. It is difficult for a district to sustain this level of cross-subsidy and maintain quality EL services. As you've heard earlier from others who testified, this cross-subsidy is almost a 2-to-1 ratio for what we need to do today. Teachers also need additional support with quality professional learning opportunities regarding evidence-based English learner instruction. Educators are making history. They are doing something that has never been done in the history of our United States education system. They are required to educate first-generation immigrants to the level of career and college ready in one generation. This has never been done before. If you think about maybe your ancestors who were here, there were many languages in Minnesota. None of them needed to necessarily know academic English to be successful. Now, the times have changed. The requirements are very significant for our learners, and our teachers need the support so they have the professional development they need to meet the needs of the diverse learners in their classrooms. In addition, the funds will help meet the requirements for our state's LEAPS Act for professional learning. Finally, our Minnesota economy will benefit from multilingual graduates who have the multilingual and critical thinking skills necessary to complete career and college training. In the Brookings 2005 report, Mind the Gap, it said, by 2020, the Twin Cities region will lose more than 350,000 highly skilled workers to retirement. It is essential to replace this skilled labor to keep the economy churning with high-quality growth. They go on to state that we need to have every single high school student career and college ready and be able to enter into the society. We currently are very proud to have the first Karen ESL licensed teacher working in our district. She is very excited. She graduated from Roseville Area High School, and she's very excited to give back to her community. I think this kind of funding placed well supports both our multilingual student success and the diverse kind of teaching force that we are looking for in our state. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you. Mr. Heller and members, I'm going to have to ask you to take questions at this point offline because we are at time. Representative Herr, any closing comments?
I did have a whole bunch of closing comments.
Keep it brief, please.
But everybody already actually spoke to all those, so there's no need for me to repeat. Last year I shared my own EL story, and I know how inspiring and moving that was, so I won't reshare it. I do just want to say quickly that we all know the truth around the disparities around opportunity and education outcomes between white students and students of color. This is the same for our EL population, a large portion of our EL population come from low economic backgrounds in addition to having language barriers issues. And so in order for us to really get this, our student body ready for entering the workforce and really contributing to our society the way we would want them to and that we actually need them to, it really is critical in us funding EL and increasing the funding for that. So thank you all so much for consideration.
Thank you very much. With that, Rep. Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 448 as amended for possible future consideration. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we didn't have committee yesterday, so I want to take this opportunity just to make a special note, as I have for the last 4 years. Yesterday was Bus Driver Appreciation Day in Minnesota. And As I have in past years, I went to Hastings Bus Company at 6 o'clock in the morning to have coffee and donuts with the drivers before they went out and to thank them for what they do. The highlight this year is to highlight the fact that there's such a shortage of bus drivers around the state of Minnesota. So I would encourage people to take a look at that. It's not just drivers, but dispatchers and mechanics and aides. The aides on the buses are a very integral part of that team. So please consider that as a part-time job, and thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative. Members, thank you so much. With that, we are adjourned.